Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're taking a look at some great news for victims of stroke. Treatment can now be administered, I guess, up to 16 hours after onset of a stroke. That's a little different. We're going to find out the details about that, what it might mean to you or to me, with our two guests, Dr. Luke Bradbury, vascular neurologist with the UW Hospitals and Clinics, medical director of their stroke program, Chris Welly, master's-trained registered nurse. She coordinates the UW Comprehensive Stroke Program. Chris helped organize Wisconsin's first stroke camp for survivors and loved ones. If you have questions about stroke, maybe an experience you want to talk about, I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org, or you can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. And Dr. Luke Bradbury, welcome. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thanks so much for having me back.
And Chris Welly, great to have you back, too.
Great to be back, Larry.
Well, we've got lots of good things to talk about. Dr. Bradbury, maybe first, tell us about this change in the treatment window for stroke and maybe what prompted it.
Absolutely. So one of the most common kinds of strokes, probably about 85% or so of all strokes, are due to a lack of blood flow. So there's a clot or there's a blockage somewhere in the arteries that bring blood to the brain. And everything downstream from that blockage is at risk of dying in the brain. And that's what defines a stroke. And about 25% of all of those types of strokes are due to what we call a large vessel occlusion. In other words, a clot has formed somewhere, for example, in the heart, or if someone has a disease in their carotid arteries in the neck, you know, atherosclerosis, mm-hmm. cholesterol buildup, a clot can form there and then travel up into the brain and block one of the major arteries. I think it was last time we were here, we talked about some really exciting studies that have been done where some new techniques and devices had been developed in order to go up. And similar to how people have stents placed in their heart arteries, they can have a small device sort of threaded up the arteries into their brain. We can grab onto that clot and pull it out and restore blood flow. And the original studies for that kind of intervention, what we call mechanical thrombectomy, or where we go in and remove that blood clot, went out to 6 hours. We know that the longer a blood clot stays in an artery, the longer that brain has to actually suffer injury and sure. parts of the brain die. So speed had been one of the emphases on these new studies, these new devices. How quickly can we get people to have that blood clot removed? And all of the original studies had been done up until 6 hours. So the original guideline recommendations after those studies came out was that if you can get a patient and within 6 hours of their last normal time, could you pull that blood clot out? And the results were very positive. So that was a big step forward. The latest round of studies and what has changed our guidelines again is that we looked at going out to 16 hours in one of the big studies and 24 hours in another big study and tried to see if these people with large clots in their arteries, yeah. you know, causing stroke. Could we actually do scans to see, is that brain still alive? And if it is, then can we go up and pull that blood clot out and restore flow and rescue that brain? Some people have a blockage in their artery and they very quickly develop dead brain tissue and progress to a bad stroke. Other people, because of sort of routing blood around that blood clot, can kind of maintain that brain, keep it alive, and give us time to go up and pull that blood clot out. So really these new studies that go to 16 or 24 hours used imaging techniques, often with CT scans that we can do in the emergency department to determine, is that brain still alive? And if it is, can we go up and pull that blood clot out? So now we're in the past, if I got a call, for example, from a hospital 2 hours away, and they said that we have a patient who's clearly having a big stroke, but unfortunately it's been 10 hours since they were last normal. We don't know when exactly the stroke started, but it's been that long. We used to think there's not much that we can do to help that patient. Now we can have them flown down or driven in an ambulance quickly down to UW, we can do a scan in the emergency department and determine, is that brain still alive or not? And if it is, we can try and pull that blood clot out and restore blood flow. And the results for these studies were very positive. Patients who were able to get this procedure done did very, very well often, and they improved a lot from their stroke. So it's changed our guidelines. Now we're extending the time window out to 24 hours even to try and rescue patients.
That is really good news. Chris Welly, what does this change mean for stroke victims and their families?
Well, one of the one of the biggest issues we had is people who wake up with a stroke and,
yeah.
they went to bed. And so now people who wake up with a stroke, there's some hope for them, where before if we didn't know when they were last known well, or it was a long time ago, we couldn't do anything. And some people are getting out of the hospital a lot sooner, too. So, yeah, we've had a few people just go home in 2 days after a major stroke.
Yeah. I can envision somebody, if you're somewhere in the Boundary Waters or someplace where you can't get there, even the time, it's still... Mm-hmm.
This is one of the biggest challenges of stroke, and particularly in Wisconsin, what we deal with quite often is we have some major metropolitan areas where people live very close to hospitals that can treat strokes. But we have a lot of people that live far out in rural areas that do not have the time access to big stroke centers like we have. Here in Madison, we're very lucky. We have a comprehensive stroke center at UW, and we have two excellent primary stroke centers at Meritor and St. Mary's. But a lot of people live hours away from any type of stroke center. And so in order to help these patients now, we know that, if a rural hospital, out in the North Woods can call us and say, hey, we have this patient, is there something we can do? And hopefully there is, that we can actually still help them.
So. And Chris, you're saying that the recovery is pretty good?
It's amazing. I mean, if they're the right patient, it can be just amazing. Everyone is thrilled and amazed at how well they can do.
That's wonderful. And I don't imagine all, as you kind of indicated here, not all hospitals can do this procedure.
That's right. Not all hospitals can do it. It's becoming more common in that there's more people trained to do these procedures who are coming into practice now, and hospitals are recognizing the need for this. But it is something where you need to have quite an investment in equipment and in personnel. Not only the doctors who do the procedure, but you also need, a lot of radiology techs and nurses and, a lot of support staff in order to help make this happen for the patient. So it's a pretty big resource heavy endeavor to.
And I think this telestroke network is pretty cool. And maybe you could talk about that and what it and the part it plays in treating stroke victims.
Yep.
A bit more.
So we have, we have several telestroke sites out there, and one is our, what a telestroke network is there are hospitals that contract with UW who will have sort of a webcam set up in their emergency department on a cart, and if they call me when I'm on call at any time of the day, 24 hours a day, they can call us and say, we have a patient who looks like they're having a stroke. I can log in on my computer and look at the patient and do an exam with the nurse in the room, which can help me test strength and test vision, test sensation, language, all these things that help me understand exactly what the patient is experiencing. They can also see me, which I think is a good, it's always nice to be able to interact with the person who's trying to care for you there. So I can see them and do an evaluation. And sometimes I'll log in and I'll see a patient who may be, hours away from here. And I'll say, that actually doesn't look like a stroke. Maybe they had a seizure and they're recovering from that. Or it may be, yes, that's actually a large vessel stroke like we were talking about, and we need to send the helicopter to pick them up and bring them to UW. So it can be very helpful to actually see and evaluate the patient. And so this is something that helps improve also the medicine we give for strokes, TPA. Those hospitals can have that medicine, and I can recommend starting it there and then sending them, to UW. So we don't delay treatment either. It
can be that's mm-hmm. very nice. Well, Mike in Milwaukee has something relating right to this. Mike, hi.
Yes, hi.
And what have you got for us today?
Well, I wanted to let you know that about 3 years ago, I suffered what they called a massive stroke. My wife discovered me on the floor. My one side was totally paralyzed. And within 15 minutes, I was at Columbia St. Mary's. They tried to dissolve the clot, and it was too massive. They couldn't do it. So they were able to contact a surgeon from Frederick who came in and did that procedure for going in and grabbing the clot and pulling it out. The next day when he came to see me and I was talking to him and was reading, he was absolutely astounded as a doctor. And within... I would say, I think it was 3 days at the most, I was home, and they were questioning whether I would actually need to be able to go under any kind of rehab or not because I was so completely healed. What I ended up doing was a little physical therapy and a little speech therapy, and I would say I'm probably like 98% recovered. The nurses at the hospital claimed it was a miracle. They'd never seen anything like that before.
That's great news, Mike.
Yeah, that's wonderful news.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if you how you relate to your friends these days. I hear some people who have had mild strokes, which now your stroke was turned from massive to mild, how that's changed your life.
Well, it's pretty significant. Certainly, I was, when I first came through and realized what had happened, I was questioning, you know, whether we'd have to move, whether I'd ever be able to drive a car again. And, you know, those things didn't need to happen, although we have moved to an apartment from our house just in case something did happen, that it kind of made me think, you know, I need to make sure that I have someplace that's accessible, because if I hadn't gotten the recovery I had, I probably would be in a nursing home right now.
Yeah.
Well, I wanted to let you know about Stroke Camp, Mike, if you haven't heard about it. In September, the 9th to the 11th, we have a stroke camp in Green Lake, Wisconsin. It's a fairly small fee, and there are, what do you call it? scholarships available.
Oh.
But it's a whole bunch of folks who have had strokes and in all different phases of recovery, who get together and we go out fishing and boating and have a good time. Yeah. And people really enjoy the ability to talk with other folks who've been through the same experience. So just wanted to let you know that that's an option. And
actually for me, in my case, I think what's pretty amazing is the fact that if you met me now, you would never know I had a stroke.
Yeah.
There are several people who come to camp like that. It's funny because, and they find that frustrating that people say, you're fine, you don't have anything. And they're like, well, you know, I am different. There are some different things. And but anyway, yeah, it's not for people who are disabled. I just wanted to make that point.
Make that clear. And thanks very much for your call. I appreciate it very much, Mike. By the way, you can join in, too. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page, our Ideas Network Facebook page. Lee in Green Bay will turn to you next. Hi, Lee. Lee, are you there?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call. My wife had a stroke a couple years ago, and it was called a brain bleed, and she's recovered quite well, but she has a 50% vision cut in both eyes, and that's a significant disability. I was wondering, is there any research done on being able to recover that vision at all, or reverse that damage?
Hmm. Dr. Bradbury, is there anything going on in that area?
You know, so the back part of the brain called the occipital lobes is where our vision is processed. And so the light comes into your eyes and it then, you know, creates, it hits the back of the eye where there's a nerve layer that senses that light. And then it sends those signals to the back of the brain where it's sort of processed into the vision that we recognize in our consciousness. And so when you have either a blood clot stroke, like we were talking about earlier, or a bleeding type stroke, like it sounds like Lee's wife has had, where it's what we call a hemorrhagic stroke, that affects the back part of the brain, you can have vision affected. And if you have it on one side of the brain, it will affect both eyes. It's just sort of how things are routed through the brain there. And so in patients who have a brain cause of vision loss, and they have often, like what Lee is describing, where you lose half of your vision in one side of each eye there, the recovery can take a long time, and it is sometimes limited. It's one of those frustrating things where if someone has weakness, for example, after a stroke, you can work with physical therapy to increase the strength, you know, on that side of your body that might be weak. If you have slurred speech because you have weakness in the face, you can work with a great speech therapist to pronounce your words again and kind of move the muscles, strengthen them up a little bit more. With vision, we're always using that. If you're awake and your eyes are open, you're trying to use your visual system, and so you're constantly using that. But that's one of the challenges we have, in that people who have damage in the brain due to things like this, bleeding or blood clot strokes, recovering from that can be very difficult. And I hope some someday things like stem cell research or other, you know, neurogenerative, you know, kind of processes can improve vision. A lot of the time it just takes time, though, to allow the brain itself to heal.
All right. There we go. Thank you so much for calling, Lee. Appreciate your call. Dr. Luke Bradbury, vascular neurologist with UW Hospitals and Clinics, medical director of the stroke program. Chris Welly, master's trained registered nurse, and she coordinates the UW Comprehensive Stroke Program and has helped organize Wisconsin's stroke camp for survivors. She just mentioned that. We may talk a little bit more about that, too, as we go along today. Questions, give us a call, 800-642-1234. I'm Larry Mueller, Jill Nadeau, our producer, here on the Ideas Network. At 11:45 today, we'll talk about new medical treatments, some more new treatments with our guest, who will talk about an exciting new treatment for lymphoma. So stay with us for that. Right now, talking new treatments for strokes with Dr. Luke Bradbury and Chris Welly from the University of Wisconsin Hospitals and Clinics. Great to have them along. You know, we probably, Chris, and maybe you can do this, talk a little bit about the whole business of identifying a stroke, because there are still times, I'll bet, when people don't recognize that they're having one, and then they come in later than they should.
Thanks, Larry. Yes. That's certainly an issue. People have been historically told, you know, when you're not feeling well, take 2 aspirin, call me in the morning, right? And we know now that chest pain is an emergency and you should go. But things where you don't see blood are tricky for other people to discern sometimes what's happening. So it's real important to get the symptoms out there so people come as soon as possible. Because even though we can go out a little further, we can't go out more than 24 hours, and still the best outcome happens in the first couple days, or first couple hours, sorry.
Sure.
It's real important. A lot of people have heard the acronym FAST for face, if they have weakness on one side of the face, arms, one of the arms is weak, speech, difficulty speaking or understanding what's being said, and T for, some people say time, call 911. Other people say terrible headache, call 911 is the same. But we've added B to that for...
B-E.
Yes, B-E. Because strokes in the posterior circulation are often missed. And so we wanted to help people understand that. Symptoms come on suddenly, and it would be a sudden dizziness. Not all sudden dizziness is stroke or difficulty with balance, but it can happen. Also, vision. As the other caller said, his wife's symptom was vision. So people who have difficulty seeing out of one or both eyes, blurred vision, double vision. People might have a curtain come down over their vision or from one side. A lot of times what happens is people will have that and it'll get better, and they don't appreciate that now's the time to go to the emergency room. Even though it seems like there's nothing wrong with you, you need to go and get checked out.
So B fast, B for balance lost, E for eyes, vision difficulty, and then F, face drooping, A for arm weakness, S for speech difficulty, and T, time to call 911. Well, time to talk to John in Brooklyn, I guess. Let's go there. Hi, John.
Hi. The question I have is, I lost my mother 14 years ago from, of all things, a hemorrhagic stroke, and we were up in Fallack with her, and they basically, it was in the brainstem, and they just kind of threw up their hands and said there really wasn't much they could do about it. And then also, when I was selling cars, I had a customer who must have had that curtain syndrome where he had a stroke where he could only see to the right, he couldn't see to the left. I'll take my answers off the air.
Yeah. So that's 10 years ago that John's mother essentially died. I'm not sure where she was when that occurred, but...
So one of he mentioned the brainstem is where she had her hemorrhagic stroke. So there was, I assume, bleeding in or around the brainstem. And one of the challenges with all types of strokes, whether it's bleeding or the blood clot, lack of flow strokes, what we call ischemic strokes, is that when the brainstem is affected, they can be devastating even almost quite immediately. And the reason is that the brainstem You can think of it, it does a lot of things, but one of the main things it does is a sort of a switch that turns on the higher hemispheres of consciousness and, you know, volitional movement and all these things. And when the brainstem is affected, it's such a small area and it can be so rapidly affected by a stroke, again, bleeding or blood clot, that it can die very quickly. And so even people who show up here to our emergency department within that quick time window, if you have even a small stroke in the wrong part of the brain, it can still be devastating. And that's something we really struggle with still. We have all these amazing studies and these great new procedures we can do to rescue patients. But there are patients with certain types of strokes that are still devastated early on. And that's really frustrating for everyone, of course, especially the patients and their families.
Obviously. And then he just mentioned a person who had vision.
So the vision loss. And that's a great kind of callback to what you and Chris were just talking about with stroke symptoms. So if you experience any of these things, one of the things about strokes is they often, very often, if they're not with bleeding type, they don't hurt. And so people can have symptoms like this where they lose vision either in one eye or in one half of their visual field. Or they can have temporary weakness or temporary difficulty speaking. Speech is slurred for a little bit of time. And those are still reasons to call 911 and go to the emergency department. These new studies we have that take the time window for intervention out to 16 or 24 hours does not mean it's okay to wait. You still need to call 911 and go to the hospital right away, because each individual patient has a certain amount of time where they can protect their brain and get, you know, the treatment that we need to give them. And so you need to go to the hospital immediately. So if you're working with someone, you're, you know, helping a customer or whatever it is, you have a family member at a reunion, whatever it is, if someone talks about these symptoms or has neurological deficits that come on very quickly, encourage them to call 911 and go to the hospital right away.
Right away. Mm-hmm. Greg in Appleton, it's your turn. Hi, Greg. Thank you for calling.
Hi there. Kind of two things. First of all, stroke camp. My wife and I went 2 years ago and had a lot of fun. And while they sometimes talk about it's good for the stroke survivor, it can also be a very nice respite for the caregiver. So something different. So we had a really good time. Are you there?
Yes, that's great news. Oh, thank you.
Okay, I couldn't. It was dead air. I couldn't quite tell. Then my question for the doctor is, my wife had a stroke 5 years ago. It was a bleeding stroke. And still today has aphasia, can't use her left arm, and needs a brace on her leg to be able to walk. But one of the things that pops up a lot on the internet for people that are in our situation is stem cell research that's being done and where that is. And a lot of people think it's a miracle coming around the corner. And I was just wondering if the doctor could comment on where stem cell research is and what he thinks its future might be.
All right. Thank you, Greg.
You know, I think there's a lot of potential for stem cell research, and I am, like a lot of my patients and their family members, keeping my fingers crossed and really hoping something comes out. I do think that, you know, like a lot of things out on the internet that you'll hear about in the medical world, you know, you'll see a lot of promising reports, and you'll hear a lot of, you know, exciting news that seems to then get pushed down the road quite a lot, you know, further. And my understanding of stem cell research and where it is right now, you know, in that there's a lot of people looking into it, but trying to get those stem cells where they need to go and to develop the way that they need to in the brain is still in its relatively early stages. I would just caution people that, you know, if you're looking for something, you're going to find someone selling it. And so just be careful, you know, talk with your doctors, talk with a stroke specialist about where you might get treated. I know there are places, even internationally, that are offering stem cell treatments. And right now, the FDA in America has not identified any really promising, at least, treatments out there now. It's all still being studied very carefully. And so I hope it comes soon. I think it might still be some time away, unfortunately, before we really start to see the fruits of all the research going into that.
And I like Greg's comment, Chris, about how the caregiver received a lot of help from the camp. That
I think that the caregivers really bond with each other because their experience is quite different. Especially the earlier caller who said that he didn't feel like it was too much. But what his wife went through was probably very different than what he went through. And so for her to have someone to be able to talk about that with and just laugh and feel like they're in the company of friends. Yeah.
Where do people go to find out about that camp, by the way?
StrokeCamp.org is the website. And maybe you can put the phone number up on your web page, too.
Yeah.
Do you want me to...
Yeah, dig that out anyway, and we'll post it, but...
309-688-5450.
Wait a minute. 309-868...
Nope. 309-688...
688, okay.
5450.
5450. Okay, got that.
It's out of Illinois, and they do them all around the nation. So if you want to go to one that's in Colorado or something, you can do that, too.
You can do that as well. All right. Greg, I hope that helped. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye. Joel in Iola, your turn now. Hi, Joel.
Hi.
What can we do for you today?
Oh, I've had three strokes in the last year and a half. I have a problem thinking of words frequently, and also I'm much more emotional.
Sure. Mm. And imagine memory issues too. What kind of help is out there for Joel?
So when we talk about the warning signs of stroke, and we talk about things like weakness and vision changes and slurred speech and difficulty talking, one of the real challenges, though, is dealing with patients who've even had small strokes, dealing with things like fatigue, for example, a lack of energy, feeling tired all the time. Memory is another thing that some people can experience after they've had a stroke, and especially if they've had multiple strokes, it can really affect their memory. They feel like their short-term memory is much worse. They're not as cognitively strong as they used to be. And those are things that there is some good rehab that can hopefully address that to an extent, but we still really struggle with trying to get patients to recover that. There's no great medicine that we can give someone that will improve their memory, that can get their thinking back to where it used to be. It can improve with time, and so if your strokes were in the last year or so, I hope that there still could be time. I've seen patients down the road, a year or two or three after their stroke, that things are slowly improving. They are getting better. But unfortunately, with things like cognition, because thinking, memory, cognition, all that is really what we call diffusely located throughout the brain, a lot of the brain helps with that sort of thing. Even, you know, small strokes in different areas of the brain can affect it, and it's hard to recover from. And so we're working on that. There is a lot of research going into it, and I hope that someday we can offer more to the patients. But it's sort of like the vision thing we were talking about earlier. Giving it time can be very helpful. The emotional swings can also really affect people. When people have, there's a variety of brain injuries or diseases that people can have where they develop big emotional swings. They suddenly get very sad or very angry. That, too, I hope evens out over time. That can respond to certain medicines, though, that can help people feel that it sort of, as I like to say, it sort of evens the keel a little bit in that, you know, they can have the swings sort of minimized there. And so that's definitely something to talk with your primary doctor or your neurologist about, what kind of medicines are available to help reduce the swings that you may be having emotionally.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Yeah, and good luck. Thank you so much for calling, Joel. Appreciate your call. Let's give Heather in Eau Claire a chance to join in. Hi, Heather. Thank you for calling.
Thank you. Yes, I have a question in regards to my husband. Last year he had, what you'd call an episode. He was finishing up his day at work. He got what he felt were migraine symptoms. His vision was altered. He was trying to type out an email, and he was struggling to, you know, come up with the word. I don't know if his speech was affected because he was by himself, so he wasn't really talking to anybody. And he came home, and he didn't feel good. He thought he had a migraine, and he went and laid down for the rest of the night. And the next day, he felt better. But ever since then, he basically constantly has a mild headache all the time. And he did go see his doctor, and they thought, well, maybe he had like a little mini stroke, like a TIA. But the headaches still continue. And I guess my biggest question is, was it a stroke? And what are the risks of this happening again? He was only 45 years old.
These are common questions we get in referrals to the neurology clinic we'll see here at the stroke group. And does he have a history of migraines with other neurological problems or symptoms that he's in the past?
No, so the only migraine he ever recalled ever having was back when he was a teenager, and just once or twice.
So people who suffer from migraines can occasionally have, you know, what we call focal neurological deficits. So they can have things like vision changes. They can even sometimes have weakness, for example, on one side of their body or the other. And those are related more to a headache syndrome than we think like a true, you know, stroke-like event. Although, and it's what we would put into the category of stroke mimics, where it's, you know, people can have symptoms that look like a stroke, but in fact, the blood flow to the brain is fine and there's no bleeding and they generally recover well. But, you know, if he's 45 and this is a new problem for him, he has new headaches and he has new focal neurological problems, that usually warrants a good evaluation for potential, you know, causes of stroke. You know, there's a variety of things that we do depending on the situation, you know, what the symptoms were, how long they lasted, and the history and things like that. So, for example, brain scans, looking at the blood vessels, maybe looking at the heart, checking certain labs. There's a host of things that we might, you know, consider doing after, you know, seeing and talking with a patient who's experienced that kind of thing. And at the end of the day, we may determine that it wasn't a stroke or a TIA, or we may do a brain scan and find out that, in fact, it was that and we need to change medicine. So it's really important to follow that up with his doctor, maybe, you know, see a neurologist if it's appropriate and get some testing done, because the whole goal is to identify stroke risk factors and then reduce those to as small as we can make them, you know, with the appropriate medicines or lifestyle changes or whatever it may be. And if it turns out to have been a headache, there's maybe treatments that could be helpful for that too.
I think it's really important not to diagnose yourself with migraines to other people out there, but to come to the emergency room and assume it's a stroke until it's proven otherwise too.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And he has had some doctoring and some scans done. You know, he was having other checks done with him, and he did have, I believe it was a CAT scan. I'm not 100% sure what test it was, but they did discover, they didn't see any damage in his brain, but they did discover that his jugulars are blocked and that his collateral veins have enlarged to kind of take over that issue. Mm.
Yeah, and you know, in younger patients looking for things like blood clotting disorders, where maybe the veins do get clogged up and other things like that, you know, it really depends on that particular situation. But there can be a lot of testing that needs to happen to make sure that you're on the right medicines, again, to help keep something like that from ever happening again.
So, yeah. Mm-hmm. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Robert in Portage, it's your turn. Robert, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. And I wanted to thank both of the guests for the amazing work that you're doing. It's really inspiring to hear you talk.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
I just wanted to question. I'm an emergency physician, and I work in a rural environment. And I see, unfortunately, some of the downsides of these therapies, specifically TPA. I'll see the bleeding and death caused by the therapy itself. And obviously, this is all really high-risk stuff. What I worry about sometimes is that patients are so hopeful for a miracle cure that they're not fully appreciating the risk of these procedures and medication. And I was just wondering, Dr. Bradbury, how you help patients navigate through this kind of challenging decision at such a critical time.
Yeah, thanks for calling.
That's an excellent point, and that really any medication, intervention, anything that we do does have its risks, and then that always has to be weighed against the benefit. And so I'll have a very frank discussion with patients about what the risks and benefits are. Thankfully, for a medication, for example, like TPA we give for acute stroke, it's what we call blood clot-busting medicine, or a thrombolytic. In other words, it breaks up blood clots, but it comes with a very significant bleeding risk. Now, there's been a lot of very large studies that have shown that if diagnosed correctly and with the right imaging parameters found early on, in the main, it provides more benefit to patients, to more patients than it does cause risk. So while, you know, everyone can, you know, I can point to cases that I've had over my career where there has been, you know, major bleeding complications with giving that medicine TPA, I can point to many, many more patients who have had a benefit from that medicine by opening up a blood vessel and restoring blood flow, and they will improve more rapidly from their stroke than they would have otherwise. The great thing about these new treatments, so the treatments where we mechanically go in and remove that blood clot, there is risk of bleeding and infection and potentially causing, you know, damage to the blood vessels in the brain. That is very, very small, though, compared to even medicines like TPA. These new devices and techniques are very safe. And when a patient has the nice thing about these, too, is that when we take a patient for these procedures, we've done scans to identify that there is a blood clot. It is absolutely necessary and there's brain to rescue. So we're only taking the patients that we think we're almost certain will benefit if we can remove that blood clot. And they are much safer than previous devices and techniques and medicines that we have used in the past. So, you know, it's an evolving thing, but I will have, like I said, very frank discussions with their, with family members and patients if they're, you know, able to, given their stroke symptoms, and say, here are the risks and benefits. And I've had patients who say, look, I know I'm having a stroke, but I don't want that medicine TPA. I think the risk is too big, and that's absolutely fine. You respect that. You know, every patient has autonomy and they can make their own decisions. But, you know, we will go over the data. I want to make sure that when my patients make that decision, they're doing it with the most and best information that they can have.
So, I think the other thing that families will say sometimes when, you know, if the person does not make it, is that they wouldn't want to live that disabled, and that they would have rather taken the choice, and they understood the risks and they have no regrets.
Thank you again, Robert, for bringing that up. Appreciate it very much. Heather in DeForest, your turn. Hi, Heather.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure, about, what's on your mind?
About 2 years, it's probably about a year ago, my mom had a stroke. And I don't know how long it was after that she had the stroke that she was found, but it was probably within like 2 hours and she sought medical care. And now, post that, she had like maybe a couple months of therapy, but she probably only has about 15% of her cognitive skills back. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering, is there anything that we can do now that could help that? Now it's really sad because it's like she has the words inside her head and she can't get them out. And she's really frustrated by that. I'm just wondering if there's anything we can do now to help her. Because they say like the first 3 to 6 months is what you're going to see the most gain. But
That's true about making the gains early, that the best gains are made early, but people will tell me that they continue to make gains for years and years afterwards. I guess it depends on how your mom was baseline, if she had any dementia or any kind of issues like that. And there are lots of speech therapy people out there. I've heard people say they take, even have gone to English as a second language classes, although your mom doesn't seem like she's quite at that level, just for practice.
There's, and you know, I always tell people too, in the late phase recovery after a stroke, one of the best things that people can do is stay engaged with the world. So in other words, no one really got a lot better sitting on the couch watching TV all day. And I hope that your mother, you know, has the sort of support. Obviously she has a very supportive daughter, but you know, to get out and to go and try and do old things that she used to do, go to those, you know, community meetings, you know, hang out with friends and relatives, go out to eat from time to time. Because, you know, when you try and get back into your old ways and you try and talk more and you try and engage more with your world, that's exercise for the brain. And so while it can be very frustrating, particularly with aphasia, that trouble with language like you were describing, it's still so important to get out and try and do that, because that's where recovery can still happen.
Yeah.
I think, Heather, you might want to look into stroke camp. It sounds like it might be a great opportunity for you and your mom.
Yeah. And
I think it will be awesome. Right now, my dad's our primary caregiver.
Yeah.
So I think he would appreciate the respite, but I'm so appreciative for your program. I mean,
thank you.
It helps so much.
Thank you, Heather, very much for calling. And again, that number, well, if you go to strokecamp.org or phone, the number is 309-688-5450. And, you know, it's great to have you with us, Luke, Dr. Bradbury, and Chris Welly, but I wish we didn't have to. I wish we didn't have. You probably wish that too. But I always appreciate it when you come by, and I'm sure we'll look forward to your next visit. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for having us, Larry.
Yeah, appreciate it very, very much. Dr. Luke Bradbury, a vascular neurologist with the University of Wisconsin Hospitals and Clinics. He's medical director of their stroke program. Chris Welly, master's trained registered nurse. She coordinates the UW Comprehensive Stroke Program and has helped organize Wisconsin's stroke camp for survivors and their loved ones. And appreciate having them along. We're going to keep on the medical side of things and switch gears and talk with you about lymphoma and some new treatments for lymphoma that are out there. That next here on the Ideas Network.